This is the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you. Joshua Schwiesel, also in studio with me today, as we come back to increasingly embraced radical, naturalistic, anti-supernaturalistic, materialistic ideas. Friends, the consequences are literally horrific. Ideas do bring about horrific consequences, and we are seeing that increasingly in America. Certainly we saw that in the Soviet Union, China, in the last century, and the hundreds of millions of people who were slaughtered over a period of 100 years, a testimony to the bad ideas that were brought to bear by guys like Karl Marx and Friedrich Nietzsche. But today, we're going to look at other ideas that are bringing about consequences. And as it turns out, certainly as men begin to embrace these fundamental ideas with increasing levels of self-consistency, the consequences, as I mentioned, are horrific. We tend to call this epistemological self-consciousness in the sense that people become more self-conscious and self-consistent to the horrible ideas, and then that works out into a lifestyle that is utterly repulsive. And that this is what is happening in Washington State. This was a bit of a shock, I know, to you, Josh, as I mentioned it to you this morning. Washington State has become the first state to legalize human composting. So the governor signed this bill just yesterday, approving the alternative to cremation and burial, paving the way for the nation's first, quote-unquote, organic reduction funeral home. And so this funeral home does this composting thing and sees it as a respectable, eco-friendly way to say goodbye.
Yeah, and really what you have with the funeral home is, it would be better termed a recycling center.
Yeah, a recycling center.
We used to just take our plastic bottles and cans, and you could redeem them for 5 cents. And now we take grandma and grandpa there, in the case of Washington State's new law.
For recycling.
For recycling.
So you're recycling grandma.
That's right.
And I'm sure you do it for a price. I doubt that they give you 5 cents for it.
Yeah, it's probably not a redemption price like that.
Well, you can turn your loved one into compost, friends, now. And I think there's a worldview behind this. And this is my point. There's a worldview behind this, Josh. People don't just do things. They do things because they believe things.
That's right.
They become so convinced that they are cosmic dust that they realize there is no value to human life. Humanist man pretends that man is so important, that's so important, and even more important than God. But then he turns him into compost. So there was this, always been this tension between whether humanism respects human life or whether it considers human life to be disposable. It turns out that even though they fake-like they are respecting human life, they fake-like they're giving humans more dignity, but when they deny the existence of God, the very source of all value, the absolute value itself, the ultimate value. God himself is the ultimate existence and the ultimate good and the ultimate value. And so if you reject the idea of God being the ultimate goodness, then nothing has value.
And you end up worshiping the creature rather than creator. And in this case, we have a demonstration of worshiping the planet, with the desire to save the planet and to be conscious of the ecological needs of the planet, even to the point of recycling human remains.
Well, Psalm chapter 8 says, "What is man that thou art mindful of him, or the son of man that thou visitest him? You have made him a little lower than the angels, and crowned him with glory and strength." And I think what the environmentalists would say is that he has evolved a little lower than garden compost, and therefore becomes a contribution to plant life in the next generation.
If you're not going to keep living, we might as well use what's left of you to contribute to the planet.
So there's hardly any dignity to the idea that a human has less value than the plant that he fertilizes.
You only have dignity, apparently, as long as you're alive. That dignity evaporates upon your death.
And here's the other aspect to this, friends. There is no expectation of resurrection for the apostate humanists in the West. There's no expectation that we will go through a bodily resurrection amongst those Christians that embrace this worldview. People who expect resurrection tomorrow, they won't bother cremating the body. But you see, that's Christian faith. Christian faith actually expects resurrection.
We have a hope that looks forward to eternity, and the modern generation has a hope that cannot extend past their own life. There's nothing beyond that.
Yeah, and for us, resurrection is right around the corner. See, that's the mentality. But that's not the hope of the non-Christian. If resurrection's right around the corner, and the resurrection will be the resurrection of this body, as in the planting of a seed, but there's something about that seed that maintains into the final resurrected spiritual body, then I'm not going to be motivated to destroy this body.
Well, and I've been shocked to consider how people have these environmental concerns. They want to save the planet. They want to see the planet maintained. There's even been some recent news articles that I've read of millennials who have stated that they're going to do their part for the planet to not have any children whatsoever. They want to make sure that they do not add to the carbon footprint. They do not hurt the planet any more than it's being hurt. And then I wonder, well, if you're going to die and there's no children after you, what are you saving the planet for? What is the ultimate goal that we're even saving?
And I don't think they think that far. I don't think they see that there is any real fundamental purpose or meaning for the universe. And so even the evolution of the organic life forms that exist, there's no reason for the organic life forms to evolve. There just isn't any ultimate purpose because there is no ultimate God and there is no ultimate teleology for a universe like ours. And so at the end of the day, they are self-defeating in their worldview. And that's what we're trying to explain, friends. The ungodly worldview assumes, but then his conclusions do not comport with his assumptions. And that's the problem with modern man. He thinks that he has some value. He thinks he has some purpose. But when you keep questioning him, we find that there is no purpose. There's no value. There is no ultimate good. And therefore, there cannot be a right or wrong about how we treat ourselves, how we treat others, or how we treat this earth. Now, of course, as Christians, we turn to God's word. We turn to God's law. We turn to God to find the truth and to know the truth and to understand what is right and wrong. Cremating is what pagan cultures have always done. Leviticus 19 defines what pagan cultures look like. Pagans eat blood with the Twilight series. They consume blood-rich organs like the placenta and other things. Pagans practice witchcraft with Harry Potter. Pagans take off all maleness and celebrate androgyny, and pagans don't seem to care who their daughters have relations with. That's Leviticus 19:26. You shall not eat anything with the blood, nor shall you practice divination or soothsaying. You shall not shave around the sides of your head. You shall not shave your beard. You shall not make any cuttings in your flesh for the dead, nor tattoo any marks on you. Do not prostitute your daughter, and so forth. Now, Acts 15, of course, confirms these cultural laws forbidding the consumption of blood, for example. But pagans, it turns out, they tend to migrate towards tattooing. They migrate towards witchcraft. They migrate towards eating blood. They take off the maleness and celebrate androgyny, and they seem to be a little lackadaisical about who their daughters have relations with.
Well, it's interesting to see just how many parallels there are, but all of these things reappear in some sort of 21st century garb.
They
do. But it's still the fundamental... the same thing.
They do. This seems to be happening in Western society today, celebrating the Twilight series, Harry Potter and the Avengers, witchcraft in the movies, androgyny and the hairstyles and the dress, and the tattooing and the loose handling of the dating for daughters and cremation. So these pagan systems, these pagan cultural systems seem to return again and again. And we speak of this, by the way, in The Tattooed Jesus, my book on popular culture, available at our website, kevinswanson.com or generations.org. It's called The Tattooed Jesus. What would the real Jesus do with pop culture? To better understand what a post-Christian culture looks like and how that contrasts with a Christian culture, get a copy of this book, The Tattooed Jesus, at our website. We'll be back with more in just a moment on the Generations Broadcast.
Hello, my friends. This is your host, Kevin Swanson, with a special message. You know, we face tremendous attacks on faith, family, and freedom in our day. This generation sits on a knife edge, and the social and economic pressures are rising exponentially. But we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual wickedness in high places. And the greatest need of the day is faith, faith-filled men. godly men to be husbands, fathers, and leaders. So this year, Generations is sponsoring not one, but two men's discipleship intensives for fathers and sons, young men, and church leaders. We are planning these men discipleship intensives for Paoli, Indiana for July, and Elizabeth, Colorado for November. Join me with Scott Brown, Mark Robinette, and others in Paoli, Indiana, or Elizabeth, Colorado this year. These events are space limited, so you need to register now for it. Register at generations.org/events. And we're back on the Generations broadcast, Worldviews Conflict when it comes to environmentalism, as well as the composting of human bodies. Friends, we have a different anthropology, we have a different ethic, we have a vastly different worldview than that which the environmentalist movement touts. More fundamentally, the human body is being composted to provide for plant food, and that means that man has been created a little lower than the plants, and has not been crowned with glory and strength, as Psalm 8 tells us. The Word of God gives us our basis, our value. It gives us our goals. It gives us our duties. It gives us our purpose for life. And without that, you're just cosmic dust without a reason.
And after that verse you mentioned, that we've been made a little lower than the heavenly beings and crowned with glory and honor, we move on in Psalm 8, where it says, "You have given him dominion over the works of your hands. You have put all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen, and also the beasts of the field and all the other creatures that God has made."
And I use that, Josh, for our new book on animals called God Made Animals for a sixth grade level, but really it's written for the whole family. And so this is a 260-page beautiful book that gives us a beautiful picture of the animal kingdom and what God has created. And one of the things we try to do in the book is give us something of a purpose or meaning to even study and to understand the creation around us. And that, of course, is to praise God, to glorify God, the creator, for his amazing wisdom and knowledge and goodness and strength and power and all of these things that have brought about this amazing creation that blows the minds of researchers and scientists that study the complexities, the beauty, the varieties of plant life and animal life throughout this beautiful globe. But the second reason for a studying science is to take dominion and to rule. And so we immediately, on every page, we provide praise and worship and obedience and dominion and rule as the purpose for kids studying this, or for any of us studying God's world. There has to be a reason for us to study it. There has to be a reason for us to observe and to bring this into our homeschool or Christian school curriculum. And that is, we must take dominion. And so a fair portion of this book deals with environmentalism, especially the last chapter. I asked the question about wolves. I asked the question about how to preserve the rhinos and the elephants. Well, when it comes to the wolves and dogs are carnivorous animals, of course. They are actually God's cleanup crew. And they're actually God's cleanup crew, the vultures in the air. They're also God's cleanup crew, the shrimp and the crustaceans and others that clean up the bottom of the ocean.
God has garbage men in every single.
He does, because
garbage animals.
Because
he
doesn't like
us
to leave organic material rotting all over his clean earth. Mm-hmm. And God is good, and God is looking out for his world, and so that's why he creates the cleanup crew. So we have whole sections on cleanup crew throughout the book. But we also deal with the cleanup crew of the wolves and the dogs, and they are. I don't know if you've noticed our dogs. In fact, you were eating lunch with me, and you noticed we had a couple of dogs in the kitchen.
That husky was looking for my carrots.
He was
right on it.
Yep. Yeah. And because he knows his job. He knows that his purpose is to clean up any other organic matter that that winds up on the floor around the table. Well, wolves and dogs are God's cleanup crew. And to the extent that wolves will clean up rotting meat as scavengers, these animals provide a useful purpose. Wolves have populated every area in the Northern Hemisphere, Europe, Asia, America. Wolves are clear through the Northern Hemisphere. Somehow they have not made it very far south, but they're
largely in the Northern Hemisphere. However, they have been largely eliminated from the continent of the United States and Europe. But environmentalists who do not fear God and refuse to obey God's command to rule over the animals are pushing a harmful agenda when it comes to the wolves. These foolish people try to protect the wolves and send them into areas where humans are farming and ranching. In 1995, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service purposely released 66 wolves into Idaho and Wyoming. Now, they did it purposefully. 22 years later, after they released these wolves, the Idaho Wildlife Services recorded 113 wolf kills of sheep and cows on ranches in Idaho. Also, the elk herds in Yellowstone National Park dropped from 19,000 head to 5,000 head between 1995 and 2017. That's, what, a 75% loss on the elk herds in and around the Yellowstone National Park. So, friends, that happened as the wolf population grew from 25 to over 500.
And we're to have dominion over these creatures and use them for God's glory and for our own benefit. And this kind of example is a situation where you are doing quite the opposite. You're harming the dominion task by introducing these wolves.
And we absolutely must bring a biblical worldview into our children's science classes where we present God's rule for us, and that is to take dominion over the animal kingdom. Psalm 8 bears that out, also Genesis chapter 1, and we bring these verses throughout this book called God Made Animals. It's our sixth grade worldview science course for sixth grade students. When wolves are kept in areas far away from humans, northern Alaska and Canada, they can continue to function as God designed them. So that's where they were before the U.S. Wildlife Department introduced 44 of these critters into Utah or into Idaho and Wyoming. And friends, the consequences for ranches and farms, catastrophic. This is not dominion. This is an environmentalist pipe dream. This is the worship of the creature rather than the creator, and the refusal to submit ourselves to the commands of our creator. That is, we are assigned to take dominion over these animals.
Yeah, for the environmentalist, it's the proliferation of wolves that is the highest value. Whatever happens to the farms and the farmers and the ranchers doesn't matter, because
right,
we just want more of them.
Right. And it is the responsibility of ranchers and farmers under God's law to kill these wolves. So these wolves were doing fine in northern Alaska and Canada. Why? Because they were away from the ranches and farms. That's why. They can clean up the carcasses of animals already dead. God made them for that. And they can control the population of sea otters, seals, and black bear. And so God created man in his image. In the image of God, he created man. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it.
Mm-hmm.
Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. Do you see how important it is that we bring a biblical worldview into our science classroom, especially when it comes to caring for animals?
It's no surprise, then, that we are composting human remains when we have for so long heard in our culture that animals are to be revered and worshipped and rather than taken dominion of.
Well, the other question that comes in has to do with what to do with the elephants, what to do with the rhinos and such. Unbelieving scientists and ecologists, you know, always worried about the earth producing, always worried about sustaining the wild animals. But, you know, it's hard to know which animals are going extinct. It's extremely difficult to count the wild animals in the world because most of them are hiding in the oceans, the forests, and under the dirt. So nobody really knows for sure when species go extinct. You know, recently scientists discovered over 1 million penguins in Antarctica that nobody knew existed. They saw it from a satellite.
The environmentalists were not on top of it.
Black stuff kind of moving around in Antarctica. Well, what is that?
Yeah.
Oh, it's 1 million penguins we didn't know existed.
So much for our management of all these things.
Exactly.
We're missing 1 million of them.
And in the 2000s, of course, school children were told that the polar bears were disappearing because of global warming. But at the same time, between 2005 and 2017, the polar bear population actually increased from 22,000 to 30,000. That's the highest population for polar bears in 50 years. So while
all of these school children around America were being told that the polar bears were disappearing, their population was actually increasing.
And donating, perhaps, gobs of funds to the preservation of them as
well. And, you know, when people don't fear God, when people are coming to the conclusion that somehow governments must control everything, and that humans have less importance than animals, they will be motivated to lie. They will be motivated to give way to a lie, and they will draw wrong conclusions when it comes to their scientific surveys and their scientific modeling. Why? Because their presuppositions are just dead wrong. They don't fear God. The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom and knowledge when it comes to these scientific surveys, these scientific research. But because they don't fear God, they will come to the wrong conclusions. That's why it's so essential that we trust scientists who fear God. And we don't trust scientists who refuse to fear God. Well, some people say that cities are squeezing animals out of their habitats, but cities only make up 3% of the Earth's landmass, and that doesn't include the oceans and lakes. So the first rule when it comes to taking care of animals is that animals are not more important than humans. The biblical solution to the problem of rhinos and elephants, for example, is not to trust governments to solve the issue. The biblical solution is to privatize the ownership of land and animals. Because, you see, rhino horns and elephant tusks are highly desirable in some markets, and people will pay good money for them. When ranchers raise rhinos and elephants for a market, they will make sure that they defend their animals from poachers. Of course, they're going to make sure that the animals are reproducing as well. And so private farms and ranches are pretty careful not to go out of business. Wild buffalo, you know, used to roam the American prairies, but thankfully, private ranches are raising buffalo. In 2017, there were 184,000 bison on U.S. ranches, and get this, only 10,000 head made up the government herds.
Sounds like the private individuals are doing a much better job of preserving them.
By a factor of 18.
Yes, by quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the idea that, governments need to take care of these things. No. When the land is turned over to the government, nobody profits from the raising of these large mammals, and they will eventually go extinct.
And in the Dominion task, we have an interest in these creatures. God has given us these creatures. They have beneficial resources. Bison gives us great meat, fur.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We're going to want to use those
things.
That's right. We're not going to kill them all
exactly.
off. We're going to preserve them.
Exactly. And poachers will always risk shooting the animals to provide for the worldwide market for rhino horns and elephant tusks, and governments are never as careful to care for the land as private owners are. So, you know, you turn the land over to the government, and in the end, the poachers are going to be the only ones supplying the demand for tusks and for these rhino horns. When governments grab up over half of the land and refuse to allow private farmers and ranchers to buy the property, they can never provide for the kind of care which private persons would take to their own land. Good biblical dominion begins with private property. Why? Because God's law says, thou shalt not steal. That's the foundation for all human work in economics. It's the basis of private property. If everybody owns everything in common, then there's no stealing. But if everybody owns everything in common, then nobody really owns anything. That is, if 20 kids on the block own one bike, nobody's going to take care of the bike and keep it out of the rain.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be rusted out real fast.
That's the way it works, friends. So we have a responsibility to own the land, cultivate the land, and take good care of God's animals. Now, let's get to work. And that's the way my book ends. I just finished 67,000 words of presenting a biblical perspective of the animal kingdom and our role in praising and worshiping the Creator for His genius, for the wonderful works that He has accomplished in creating this variety and this beautiful creation with all of its complexities. Friends, we need to step back and say, God is awesome. And that is the purpose of this new book we've just released called God Made Animals. And I love the layout as well.
Mm-hmm. It's coming together.
Justin's doing a great job.
Yes.
And you can order it at our website, kevinswanson.com or generation.org, and take a look at a sample of this new book just being released. We still have a month or two before we ship it, but you can pre-order right now at our website. It's called God Made Animals. Get a biblical perspective of studying science and understanding dominion for the animal kingdom in this new book, called God Made Animals, written at a sixth grade level, maybe a seventh grade, maybe an eighth grade level. Certainly, it is a book you can read for the whole family. I'd encourage you to order the book now at our website, generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson and Josh Wiesel, and we invite you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.